is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Most of the people we are seeing are having a mild or moderate form of COVID-19 and not the severe form that requires hospitalization and that may lead to death.
That's Dr. Richard Friedland, CEO of Netcare, one of South Africa's biggest private hospital groups, who says the Omicron variant is not resulting in as many admissions as previous waves of COVID-19 pandemic. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman is headed to the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, and Egypt as part of a diplomatic effort to end the conflict in Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The United States launched a virtual summit for democracy today, hosting more than 100 world leaders, civil society activists, and journalists in what it calls the largest gathering of its kind ever held. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports, the State Department says America is approaching the global attack on democracy with humility and confidence.
The hours-long seizure of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th by supporters of Donald Trump, seeking to overturn his electoral defeat, shook many around the world, including incoming President Joe Biden. That attack is part of what moved Biden to host a major summit for democracy, says U.S. Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights, Uzra Zeya. Uzra Zeya is the Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights. She spoke to reporters from the State Department.
We approach this week with both humility and confidence. Humility in that we want to listen and learn and don't shy away from our shortcomings. Confidence in our constant striving for a more perfect union and our certainty that working together, democracies can and will deliver for the world's citizens, regardless of the raw deal that autocrats and authoritarians try to sell.
The January 6th insurrection left its mark and is influencing how other countries behave on the world stage, according to Brian Katulis of the Middle East Institute. Brian Katulis is with the Middle East Institute. He spoke to VOA.
I hear more of a posture from countries, friends, adversaries, competitors alike, that many of them are going to be hedging against the United States, meaning they're not going to be all in necessarily, in part because they see the world's changing. But then to a large degree, they worry about a pendulum swing in the United States, meaning, you know, they saw things shift substantially from President Obama to President Trump, and now it's shifting in a different direction under President Biden.
The struggle between the world's democracies and authoritarian governments has been a central focus of the Biden administration's foreign policy, with crises in Myanmar, Haiti, and Sudan, among many other places. Authoritarian leaders of countries like Russia and China are not invited to the summit. Russia and China have criticized the summit itself as anti-democratic and divisive. On a recent visit to Kenya, Secretary of State Antony Blinken described what he called a worrying democracy recession on the African continent and around the world.
Democracy is falling back. It's being tested, democracy, in all sorts of ways, from inside and from outside. And we've seen citizens' trust in democracy decrease. We've seen bad actors play up some of the divisions that exist within democracies, independent institutions challenged and undermined, journalists, human rights activists threatened and attacked.
Biden envisions the summit as kicking off a year of action promoting democracy, fighting corruption and extremism, and protecting detained and threatened journalists and human rights activists around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, is headed to the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, and Egypt as part of a diplomatic effort to end the conflict in Ethiopia, amid concerns that the conflict could spread to neighboring countries and break up Ethiopia. The United States has repeatedly called for an immediate end to the hostilities. Meanwhile, the World Food Program has suspended efforts to get food and other aid to an estimated 9.4 million people in areas cut off from the outside world after warehouses were looted and staff were intimidated. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric says the stolen food included nutritional items for malnourished children. The Ethiopian-Sudan border conflict has escalated again with fresh clashes between Sudanese and Ethiopian troops in the disputed Al-Fashqa area that has been the subject of a decades-old conflict. The Sudanese army said elements of the Ethiopian army and its affiliated militias attacked Barakat Norin town in a bid to intimidate farmers, destroy the harvest, and infiltrate into Sudanese territory. Reporter Angie Omar spoke to Cameron Hudson, former chief of staff for the State Department's Office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, on the impact of this dispute on the Horn of Africa.
Well, I think it's a reflection of the overall level of instability in the region. Ethiopia is obviously caught in a state of civil war. Sudan recently experienced a coup. And so I think that there's some opportunism going on both sides of the border, taking advantage of the instability, perhaps the other side not paying attention. Let's recall that this has been a disputed area between Ethiopia and Sudan for the better part of the last century. There's been a kind of gentleman's agreement that has governed it for the past decade or so. But really, this is a disputed territory. And I think both sides are seeing an opportunity right now, recognizing certain weaknesses on the other side of the border to try to take advantage and change the facts on the ground and resolve the dispute, not through a negotiated settlement, but rather through this kind of military opportunism that we're seeing right now.
Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the commander-in-chief of the Sudanese armed forces, said that Al-Fashqa border area with Ethiopia is a purely Sudanese land and pledged not to give up even one inch of the Sudanese territory. However, Ethiopia rejected that, which led to clashes between the two countries' forces, claiming dozens of lives on both sides. What do you think is the way out?
Well, clearly there needs to be some kind of mediated settlement between the two countries that is lasting and durable. I think the problem is, of course, that on both sides of the border, both countries' leaders in Sudan and in Ethiopia are in their own domestic political struggles. And so neither of them are in a position right now, I think, to be showing a lot of compromise on this issue. For both sides, it's become a kind of rallying cry for nationalism, and it's been a rallying cry for, at least on the Sudanese side of the border, for the critical role that the military plays in the country. It's trying to justify its role in the political life of the country, and this is a way to do that, to demonstrate that it is still needed at the national level to secure the country's borders and guarantee the territorial integrity of the country. So I don't think either leader right now, given what's going on in their respective countries, is particularly interested in looking for a compromise, but that's certainly what's going to be required if we're going to have a lasting, peaceful solution to this.
In a bid to settle differences, the two countries held talks, yet no progress has been achieved. Meanwhile, all international mediation attempts, including by Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Russia, and the United Arab Emirates, failed to de-escalate the situation. Sudan refused to engage in a new round of talks before any border demarcation and before Ethiopia recognized Al-Fashqa is a Sudanese land. If the conflict continues, how would that impact the stability and security of the Horn of Africa?
Well, I think we have to look at how it continues and if it is the spark for a wider conflagration or if it stays contained and confined to the Fashaga area. I think part of the concern is, of course, that there's such a heightened state of political instability on both sides of the border that any additional spark could see fighting between the two countries really spiral. And that, of course, that would be devastating for the region, just as the Ethiopian civil war has been, I think, devastating for the region. And so we'll have to keep a very close eye on what's happening and make sure that it does not spill out over the border area, make sure that there are no additional forces that come in. For example, we know that Eritrean forces are in Ethiopia right now in western Tigray, not very far from this disputed border area. So if we saw amassing of troops, if we saw the introduction of foreign troops into this region, I think there would be even greater cause for concern. And I think the international community would want to act very quickly to try to avoid an escalation any further beyond what we're seeing already.
That was Cameron Hatson, former chief of staff for the State Department's Office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, speaking to reporter Angie Omar for VOA. South Africa recorded more than 20,000 new coronavirus cases yesterday, nearly double the number from 1 week earlier. The government is making a renewed push for people to get vaccinated, but so far is avoiding new lockdown measures in an effort to protect the economy. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus cases are rising dramatically in South Africa, with over 113,000 people currently infected. Experts say the Omicron variant discovered in South Africa last month is most likely driving the latest wave. But Minister in the Presidency, Mondle Gugubele, told reporters today that the government is trying to avoid stricter lockdown measures.
The damage the restriction caused last year, level 5 and so on, thousands of businesses that stopped, a number of jobs that have been lost. The attitude the government is adopting is find the best possible way of navigating whilst ensuring that the economy moves.
The South African government is championing vaccinations in order to protect more people from severe illness. The efforts appear to be working, with more than 133,000 people receiving a shot Wednesday. It means 43% of adults have at least had one dose. Gungubele says vaccinations are key to protecting lives as the government tries to protect both public health and the economy.
You need to find a balance between the livelihood and lives, because these are two sides of the same coin. And that coin is life. When one of them collapses, the life collapses.
Still, hospitalizations are increasing, with over 300 people admitted Wednesday. Minister Gungubele says the government is closely monitoring admissions to ensure facilities don't end up overwhelmed.
So far, the reports we're getting is that there is no red flag in that.
36 people died Wednesday of the coronavirus, bringing the country's death toll to over 90,000. South African health officials are expected to release more information on their findings about the current wave and the Omicron variant on Friday. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
New data released by scientists in South Africa has offered compelling evidence that the Omicron variant of COVID-19 causes less severe illness than previous forms of the disease. However, Omicron does seem to be reinfecting more people who've previously had COVID-19 and also some who've been fully vaccinated. South African medical experts have been studying the variant intensely since local genetic sequencers identified the new variant 2 weeks ago. Darren Taylor has more.
South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, has emphasized that the latest data is based on patients studied in that limited time. So, says the Institute, there's plenty of time and space for Omicron to behave differently in other populations as it spreads around the world in the coming months. The World Health Organization says the variant's been found in more than 50 countries so far. The CEO of Netcare, one of South Africa's biggest private hospital groups, Dr. Richard Friedland, suspects Omicron began driving a rapid increase in infections in the province of Gauteng 3.5 weeks ago.
Most of the people we are seeing are having a mild or moderate form of COVID-19 and not the severe form that requires hospitalization and that may lead to death. And so what we're seeing is patients present with mild to moderate flu-like symptoms, a scratchy or sore throat, a headache, or a runny or blocked nose.
Friedland manages hospitals across South Africa. He says so far Omicron's not resulting in as many admissions as previous waves of the pandemic, certainly not in Netcare facilities in the country's biggest city, Johannesburg.
We only have 337 patients. Only 10% of these patients require oxygen or some form of oxygen therapy. And that contrasts to 100% of patients that we admitted during the first, the second, and the third wave who were very sick and all required oxygen therapy. And so
Friedland says most Omicron positive people in his hospitals are what he calls incidental COVID patients. They come to hospital because of other emergencies or to have a surgical procedure and are subsequently diagnosed with coronavirus.
And when I say it feels different on the ground, when I was in our hospitals in the first three waves and seeing and visiting patients, these were patients that were struggling to breathe, that needed oxygen, and without oxygen, they wouldn't have survived. They were desperately ill with COVID pneumonia. 90% of the patients we have in hospital at the moment need no oxygen at all. They're on room air. All they have is mild upper respiratory tract infections. So very, very different clinical picture.
He says if this trend continues, most people in South Africa who get Omicron need only be treated by general practitioners, with the exception of individuals with underlying medical conditions, the elderly and the unvaccinated.
Just on the issue of vaccination, I can tell you that 75% of the cases we have admitted that are COVID positive are not vaccinated. We've had 7 deaths of this cohort of patients we've had since the 15th of November, some 800 patients, 4 of which we can attribute to COVID, and 3 of those 4 patients had not been vaccinated. And I think there is clear evidence.
Friedland says this would appear to be clear evidence that current vaccines offer some protection against Omicron. He's one of a growing number of medical professionals who think the variant, if it indeed proves to be as mild as it initially appears to be, may signify the beginning of the end of the pandemic. They cast their minds back to the global Spanish flu outbreak that claimed the lives of an estimated 50 million people from 1918 into the early 1920s. After several intense waves, Spanish flu mutated into much milder forms of disease until it wasn't a major crisis anymore. But scientists say those variants are still with us in the form of the flu viruses we continue to fight. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
An explosion in central Mali yesterday killed 7 United Nations peacekeepers and severely wounded 3 others. According to a Reuters report, a UN convoy hit an improvised explosive device in an area where groups linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State operate. UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric said in a statement that the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has strongly condemned the attack and has asked authorities in Mali to spare no effort in identifying the perpetrators so they can swiftly be brought to justice. The UN's peacekeeping mission, known as MINUSMA, has deployed over 13,000 troops to battle an Islamist insurgency in north and central Mali. It has recorded more than 230 fatalities since 2013, making it the deadliest of the UN's more than dozen peacekeeping missions. Clashes among farmers, ranchers, and fishermen over water scarcity have escalated along Cameroon's northern border with Chad. Cameroonian officials say villages and markets were torched Wednesday, and violent conflict sent thousands fleeing into neighboring Chad. Mukedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A messenger sent by traditional rulers tells at least 120 people in Kuseri, a town in Cameroon's northern border with Chad, that without peace, there will be no development and communities will become poorer. He says armed conflicts will only bring hunger and suffering. The message is broadcast several times on Cameroon's CRTV, a government-controlled radio and TV station in Masa, Musgum, and Arab Shua languages. Masa, Musgum, and Arab Shua communities live in the Logon and Shari division where Kuseri is located. Government officials in Logon and Shari said they initiated the message of peace after a conflict among farmers, cattle ranchers, and fishers over water degenerated into a violent conflict Wednesday in the communities. On Wednesday night, community leaders said several villages were torched, farms destroyed, and parts of the largest market in Kuseri set on fire. They said more than 40 people have been killed, 70 wounded, and several thousand civilians have crossed over to Chad for safety. Mahamat Abba is the sultan, a traditional ruler of Kuseri.
Je voudrais rappeler à toute la population.
Abba says, as the leader of Kuseri, he is reminding people of all communities in the commercial town that they must seek peace, unity, and solidarity as long as they live together. He says he is reminding his Musgum, Arab Chua, and Masa brothers and sisters that peace is priceless. He says a town or community cannot develop when there is war or an armed conflict. Abba spoke to VOA via the messaging app WhatsApp from Kuseri. Earlier this week, Cameroon's authorities said clashes erupted between ranchers and fishers over water in Logon and Shari. Arab Shua cattle ranchers accused Musgum fishers of digging holes that have resulted in deaths of their cows, sheep, and donkeys. The Musgum fishers dig the holes to conserve water and lure their catch. Musgum fishermen also accuse Arab Shua cattle ranchers of allowing their cattle to destroy areas reserved only for fishing. The government says when fighting erupted again, Masa farmers also accused Arab Shua cattle ranchers of allowing their cattle to destroy plantations. Masa farmers joined Musgum fishermen to attack Arab Shua cattle ranchers. Arab Shua have been fighting back. Miji Yawa Bakari is the governor of Cameroon's far north region where Logon and Shari is located. He says he led a delegation of senior state officials and the military sent by Cameroonian President Paul Biya to Logon and Shari on Wednesday night. He says Biya asked the delegation to ensure a return to peace among Masa, Musgum, and Arab Shua communities that are fighting, killing each other, and destroying property. Bakari spoke via the messaging app WhatsApp from Kuseri.
Il nous a été instruit de leur dire de travailler en synergie.
Bakari says Biya wants the rival communities to bury their differences and immediately drop their weapons for the sake of peace. Bakari says the conflict may discourage many soccer fans from neighboring Chad, Sudan, Niger, and Libya who will be traveling to Cameroon through Logon and Shari for the African Football Cup of Nations that begins on January 9. He says Cameroon cannot afford to tarnish its image at the time when the African continent's attention is focused on the Central African state for AFCON. Bakari said Cameroonians must learn to live together and communities must respect and cherish their linguistic, cultural, and religious differences. Cameroon says desertification is also pushing farmers, fishermen, and cattle ranchers to move to places where they can find food and water. Many farmers, cattle ranchers, and fishermen settle along the Logon River in the Logon and Shari division for survival, leading to regular conflicts. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.